Once you've identified that thing you want to be known for, that problem that you're going to be solving, then you've got to say it over and over and over and over again, because vision rarely repeated is quickly forgotten.
That is the voice of Jeff Henderson, and he'll be joining us on today's Super You podcast.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff.
We
choose to go to
the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Super you. Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Today, we sit down with Jeff Henderson. He made me think differently. And I know it'll make you think differently with questions like, what is on the other side of me? Meaning, how do we impact people in our orbits on a day-to-day level? Speaking of positively impacting people, if you could, please, please, please go post a review around this podcast, the Super You podcast. It allows others to discover this podcast so that they can be entertained, educated, and empowered. So please post it forward today, post a review, and help others out there. Jeff Henderson is an entrepreneur, speaker, pastor, and business leader. For the past 15 years, he helped grow one of the largest churches in the United States, and he also helped launch their North Point Online, which now reaches over 200,000 people. Jeff was recently named by Forbes magazine as one of the top 20 speakers you certainly don't want to miss. Prior to working as a pastor, Jeff started his career in marketing with the Atlanta Braves, Callaway Gardens, Lake Lanier Island, and Chick-fil-A Incorporated. I can't wait for today. Going to get a lot out of this because Jeff's unique background, both a business leader as well as a nonprofit leader. Welcome to the show, Jeff. Well, it's such an honor today to have Jeff Henderson. I've been listening to your voice for years. I saw you in person at Buckhead Church, and so it's just amazing to have you on the podcast because you span both church life and also business life. So just an honor to have you here today, Jeff.
Likewise, Eric. I'm honored to be here, and we go way back to the Buckhead Church grocery store days. So there you go. So thanks for being a part of those days.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to see how you've grown it. And people ask me, obviously, they go, well, Eric, you know, you're in digital leadership. Who should we look to for people setting the pace? And I go, you know, you need to look to the church world, specifically also look at North Point Ministries at Buckhead Church, because they're always at the forefront, putting stuff out there way before people were doing podcasts. They were on the edge of doing that. So it's an honor to have here. We're going to cover out so many things, and the audience is going to love it. I know you've got your new book out, Know What You're For. And one thing that jumped out at me right away is, what are the two questions the great leaders are asking today?
And I think, Eric, to get to that point, it really comes down to these questions help grow a business and they help grow your career. And it's actually not just a great strategy for work. It's really a great strategy for life. And these two questions, I really have observed these over the years working for, I've been on the front row of two thriving organizations, one Chick-fil-A, and you and I have a mutual friend in Shane Benson there. And then I've been the last 16 years working for North Point Ministries, and both have experienced explosive growth. And so the question I would get from time to time is, what's the biggest difference from working at Chick-fil-A and working at North Point Ministries now as a pastor? And the biggest difference is now I'm open on Sundays. Before, I was closed on Sundays at Chick-fil-A. But there's a lot more similarities than differences. And so I began to discover, what caused these organizations to grow? And there's a lot. And this isn't just for these two organizations. But over time, I basically boiled it down to these two questions. And I think if organizations can get around these two questions, Eric, it creates something that's very, very valuable. So I'll walk through the questions real quick. First is, what do you want to be known for? What does your organization want to be known for? What's your unique niche in the marketplace? What are you bringing that's distinct and unique that no one else is bringing? And that seems like a really, really easy question. But what I've discovered, Eric, is that there's confusion many times in the office space about this question. And when there's confusion in the office space, there will be confusion in the marketplace. And so what we've got to do is we've got to be really, really clear, what do we want to be known for? Then the second question is, what are we known for? What are we known for? If the first one is ours to answer, the second is the customer or the attender or the participant. It's their perspective and it's their experience with our vision. And here's the power of those two questions. When what you want to be known for is what you are known for, you create a sales force for free. You harness the most powerful form of advertising the world will ever know and has ever known, and that's positive word of mouth advertising. Because customers experience your unique vision and mission, and they tell their friends about it. And the reason this is important is because a business is no longer what it tells customers it is. A business is what customers tell other customers it is. That's where the game has been, and that's where the game is going. But the challenge with these two questions is I think the organization, the leader, the executive team, and really the whole organization, their goal should be to make sure that they shrink the gap between the answers to those two questions. Because there's no perfect organizations, there's no perfect nonprofit, there's no perfect business, and there's a gap between what you want to be known for and what you are known for. So every day we need to come to work going, okay, we all know what we want to be known for. Now let's make sure we deliver on that promise. And so that's why I think these two questions are really, really helpful for a business, because it provides an opportunity to create a sales force for free. But I also think personally, these are two questions that are very helpful personally. What do you want to be known for? And if I were to go and ask the people in your life, or if you were to go and ask the people in my life, hey, this is what Jeff says he wants to be known for. I want to ask you this question. Is he living up to that vision? And that's what he wants to do and be in his life. So that's why I think these two questions are not just a helpful strategy to grow a business. It's really a helpful strategy to grow your personal life as well.
No, that makes sense. And you mentioned word of mouth advertising or word of mouth marketing. What's the secret? And I went over this in your book. So how do we understand the secret to creating positive word of mouth? Because it's kind of a double-edged sword, because it can quickly go negative as well. And so what's the secret to creating positive word of mouth advertising?
Yeah, and it's a challenge, because look, there is no perfect organization. We're going to have our good days and our bad days. And as much as, for example, I love Chick-fil-A, somebody in the world today will probably get some cold waffle fries. So we're not batting 1,000. This isn't about perfection. It's not about never making a mistake. But it is delivering and having systems that deliver on that process. But I think to do that, you really have to be focused and create an ethos, if you will, that's for four groups of people. And when you're for four groups of people, these groups of people, what you do is I think you create a culture that is really customer-centric and customer-focused, and we shift the spotlight from the organization to the customer. For example, I still believe in this, but I've heard for many years now that the goal of any organization should be to create raving fans. I still think that's true, but I actually think the game is changing, because I think the goal should, instead of trying to create customers to become raving fans of the brand, I think the brand business should become raving fans of the customer. And many, many businesses, if you were to think of it as a sports analogy, many businesses see themselves, and churches and organizations see themselves, on the field. And what we're trying to do is get people in the stands to cheer us on. And I think the exact opposite is what needs to happen, particularly in marketing and advertising today, that it's really the customers that are on the field, and the business and the organization should be in the stands cheering them on, because the focus should not be on us. The focus should be on the customer or the people that are participating in our nonprofit. We've got to create positive experiences with four groups of people. The first, real quickly, is for the customer. And that seems like a no-brainer. But as I look at the Instagram feed, let's just pick Instagram. As I look at the Instagram feed of many brands and businesses and churches that I consult with, we'll go and I'll look at it. We'll put it up on the screen and I'll say, let's count how many of these Instagram posts are about the organization or products. And let's count how many are about the community or customer that you're trying to serve. And 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 are all about the business. Look how great we are. Look how much better we are than our competitors. Our products are amazing. And here's a danger sign with this, Eric. If a business was a person, many businesses would be considered narcissists, because it's all about them. And narcissism is bad for business. They didn't teach us this in business school, but narcissism is bad for business. And so there needs to be a shift away from just talking about how great we are to start engaging with the customers. And I give several social media strategies that I think many brands are missing. Because when I hear CEOs and executive teams say, oh, Jeff, we focus on the business. When I show them some of their social media strategies, I actually show them that they're actually focused more on the business than the customer. So obviously for the customer, but then even more importantly that, the second group is you have to be for the team. And here's why this is important, because the customer is eventually treated like the team is treated. It's a principle that you can't get out of. You can't escape from. Because when you and I walk into a restaurant, for example, Eric, I can tell you and you can tell me how the team is being treated because it's flowing right to you and me as the customer. If they don't look at me in the eye, if they're not very, they're not paying much attention to me, then that's exactly how they're being treated by their boss or their executive team or leadership team. So you got to be for the team. But then the third group you have to be for, you've got to be for people that actually aren't customers. You've got to be able and willing to be for the community. Like, what are you doing that's helping this community be better? Because where the game is going, I think, is that it's no longer about being the best company in the world. It's about being the best company for the world. And the younger demographic, the younger you go, the more people are going to be willing to only spend their dollars with organizations they believe in and they think are doing good for the world. And in today's world, this is exciting to me, in today's world, doing good is good for business. And you've got to be a meaningful brand making a difference. And then the fourth person or group to be for, which is a little counterintuitive perhaps, is that you need to be for you, that you need to remain inspired. One of the best gifts that you and I can give to the people in our lives and to your listeners and the people that attend our church, I've got to be inspired. I have to remain inspired. And what the best gift I can give them is an inspired, healthy, rejuvenated Jeff Henderson. And when that happens, it flows from me to them. So when an organization focuses on those four groups of people, I think it creates the potential for positive word of mouth advertising to exist, because you're actually being for people and you're being for people more than you are for yourself. And for me, there has to be great systems. There has to be great products. There has to be great experiences. We're not saying any of that is not true, but there are good businesses that have good products that go out of business. There are churches that pray that eventually close. So I think having a for mindset is really, really important when people experience this and go, wow, this organization truly is more for me than they are for themselves. And when you're for people, they return the favor by talking positively about you.
No, I love it. Doing good is good for business. And you're in a unique position because you've spanned both the business world and also the nonprofit world. What can business leaders learn from the nonprofit world and vice versa?
Great question. I really think when it comes to the I tell nonprofit leaders, you really should learn to think like a business leader in terms of excellence and strategy. But I tell business leaders, you need to think like a nonprofit, because a nonprofit, if you will, the only thing we have to sell, if you think of it this way, is purpose. But purpose is an incredibly valuable commodity. I even hate to use the word commodity associated to purpose. But when you have purpose and it is clear and it is transportable and people know it and they feel it, when you walk into a business, you can feel it. You can just feel the culture. You can feel it vibrating to you, if you will. And I can feel the opposite of that, or I can feel when I walk into a business and I think there's something different here. There's a vibrancy. There's a purpose. And so for business leaders, I would tell them it's not enough to go off on a two-day retreat, come up with a seven-page document with your vision statements, put it in a file, and walk away. Because if you can't walk, and this is what I ask business leaders to do, in fact, I ask them to walk around and do a vision inventory and ask people the question, what do you think we're known for, and why do you think we're here? And if people have to walk to the file cabinet or go to their computer to pull up a document, it shows you they don't know. And it's interesting to me that I can quote the mission and purpose statements of Chick-fil-A and North Point. And I've been, I'm still at North Point, but I've been gone from Chick-fil-A for almost 17 years. And so I really do believe business leaders can learn, okay, what do we need to do to make sure that our vision, we stay on message, and that our team understands vision. There's a biblical principle that says that when there's a lack of vision, the people perish. I just don't think that's a biblical principle for churches or just for the Bible. I think it's true for businesses. When a business and a team, they don't understand the unique vision that they've been called to, or the problem that they have gathered together to solve, then you wake up one day and it's drifted off course, and there's no anchor holding them down. And so one of the best things I think, Eric, that business leaders can do is to stay on message. Once you've identified that thing you want to be known for, that problem that you're going to be solving, then you've got to say it over and over and over and over again, because vision rarely repeated is quickly forgotten. And I think as leaders, we all think, hey, I've said it once. We went on this retreat. I had this PowerPoint keynote presentation. It's all good. We covered it and moved on. I wish the world worked that way. It just doesn't. But one of the best things that you can do as leaders is once you've identified the answers to those two questions, what do you want to be known for, and what are you known for? You got to stay on message and stay on purpose. And when you're doing that, and when you're staying on purpose, here's the wonderful thing, especially as it relates to your team. Purpose allows your team not to hit the snooze button in the morning, because purpose is waiting for them at work. And when people wake up and know that purpose is waiting for them at work, that's a for culture. That's a thriving culture. And when it comes to that, it's going to flow right to the customer and to the people you're trying to serve.
No, Jeff, that's great. And we just had an interview. We had a person on here recently that was talking about Disney, because they were in Disney, and they said that Bob Iger just kept repeating the mantra, the vision, ad nauseum, that almost eyes would roll in the board meeting. But you're right. You need to keep on that. Otherwise, if it's lost, if it's not repeated, then all of a sudden that vision is lost. So I love the way that you state that out there, Jeff. Now, you mentioned earlier, which kind of caught my attention, about rejuvenating. So a rejuvenated Jeff is good for everyone. I think our listeners wrestle with that no matter what role they're in, at a nonprofit or at a company. What do you do? Are there some tips and tricks? Well, we'll get into that in a second. I'll ask you tips and tricks on just general rejuvenating yourself. But if you don't mind, walk me through your typical morning routine. Like, once you wake up, what does that look like, that first hour or 2 hours of the day?
Right. I think it depends on, I think it depends on how a person is, a morning person or a night person. But for me, I try to get up, and the first thing I try to do is to get some exercise and try to get moving. That just gets my mental frame in a better frame of mind. And so I have a tendency to wake up and take on the anxiety and the worry of the world or my world. So getting a win in early is really important for me. So I'll get up, get a workout in, and then I'll go and have some what I call think time. And I'll do a devotion, I'll read something, and then I'll write, what do I need to do today for today to be successful? But all of this, Eric, is built on something that I do on Sunday evenings or Monday morning. And that's, it's what I call the weekly focus. I got this from Tommy Newberry with the 1% Club. It's a document that basically I write down my strategic priorities for the week. I write down my strategic relationships for the week. I look back on the previous week and kind of rate it, and what went well, what didn't go well. And then ultimately in this document, I ask one question, and that is, what are the three things I need to do this week for this week to be successful? And so knowing that I have that, what I then do is I look at this for 2 minutes every morning and make adjustments to it. Well, what did I check off the list yesterday? What am I procrastinating about? What do I need to really focus on? And what are the priorities for today? Because as you know, and we learned this from Stephen Covey and the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, it's really the urgent things that try to crowd in and crowd out the priorities. And so what the morning allows me to do is to reprioritize and know, okay, going into this day, here are the things I got to make sure I do, because this is what I said on Sunday night were the priorities for the week. So that's kind of an anchor for me. And then knowing I've already got a workout in, I've got my priorities straight, I'm ready to go. I feel like at that point I'm ready to take on the day. And it allows me to be inspired, knowing that, okay, these are some really important things that I don't have to do. I get to do because of the ultimate aim of what I'm trying to achieve.
And Jeff, I love how you said that. It's you don't have to do it. You get to do it. And I say that to my kids when we read at night is we get to read for 30 minutes. You don't have to read because the school says you have to read for 30 minutes. We reframe it and say, no, you get to read for only 30 minutes. And they want to read for more than 30 minutes. Not every night, but some nights
right.
They do want to read. And then I love getting into details. So when you're not traveling, because you've got a busy schedule, you've got a huge team. When it's not a crazy week, what time do you normally go to bed and what time do you normally get up?
Well, one of the things I'm trying to do a better job at is do what I'm calling a nighttime success ritual, which I try to look at this document at night as well. And so I'm trying to go to bed between 10:30 or 11 and trying to get up between 5 and 5:30 or 5:30 and 6. And so that's kind of a goal. And then if there's a morning where I'm not going to be able to get a workout in, then I'll try to like that. That happened today, actually. So I shifted a little bit of the priorities and we'll get a workout in a little bit later tonight. But I actually can feel it that when I don't get a workout in the morning, I can actually feel it. So I just feel like my days are better when I've kind of gotten up and gotten moving. But that's kind of, traveling and just sometimes you just kind of have to adjust. But I think knowing in a perfect world, here's my process and here's what I'm going to do. Here's the system. I think it helps me because without a system, I kind of drift toward the tyranny of the urgent.
No, I think we all do. And you're right. You need, Jeff, the way you say it, you need systems in place because the neuroscience shows that willpower just doesn't work. You need that system in there. And then just real curious, because I really love getting into this stuff. When you work out, are you working out the house? Are you running? Are you walking? Are you going to a gym?
For me, I have to get up and get in the car and go to the gym. We have a little bit of a place downstairs, but I just find that I don't really push myself when it's just me in a room by myself. And so I'll try to do some weights and then I do a bike. I've had some back issues and I discovered a stationary bike has really helped my back for some reason. And so I'll do a cycling class. And then I'm not able to run as much because of my back. So I'm doing a lot of walking, but every month I try to have a mileage goal that I try to beat the previous month. And so, here's how many miles I walked or cycled for this month. And that's my goal for the previous month to beat it.
No, that's great. I love it, Jeff. And then it's funny because the one thing I like about working out in the morning, again, it doesn't always happen, is that it means one shower. So that's time efficient, better for the environment. So whenever we can, it's always try to get up early to make that workout happen. Now you're one of the pioneers of social word of mouth marketing, both for the business and also nonprofit world. So this is a question that's interesting because you're going to text yourself. If you were to text your 20-year-old self, what would that text say?
It's a great, great question. I would say, believe in yourself and go for it. And don't let the fear of failure hold you back. And I've had to work through that. So I think the main thing I would say is believe in yourself. You know more than you think you do. And I think I'm probably more cautious and my approach, and sometimes that caution, it can be translated into wisdom. That's good. You don't need to jump off a bridge or whatever, but I feel like I could have moved a little bit faster versus going, I wonder if this will work. Eventually I would go, okay, this is going to work. But I think just believing in myself more would have helped me go further faster.
And going further, faster, you obviously, as a pastor's large congregation, and then as business, big teams, is there anything we can help, especially when we think about it, the younger generation, because they're wrestling with similar things. They're not believing in themselves, possibly. Is there anything as a leader that we can help them get that belief faster?
I think, Eric, if someone had told me in my 20s, you don't have to know what you're supposed to do for the rest of your life. You're just supposed to do your very best where you are and do your very best and try to do the next right thing and to figure out what your strengths are, what your skill sets are, and serve other people. And over time, everything will take care of itself. And I feel like we do, particularly teenagers, a disservice by asking them, what's your major going to be? What that means is translated in their world, what are you going to do for the rest of your life? That's a gigantic question that I don't think it's a very helpful question. I think we have put so much pressure on 18, 19, 20, and 21-year-olds. And if they don't get into the right school, then their future is ruined. I've told them, college acceptance boards do not control your future, no matter what you may think or what you may have heard. Do your best, study hard, but what you need to do is to show up early. And I tell our kids, write thank you notes. If you write handwritten thank you notes, just in and of itself, that in and of itself will set you apart. Find out what you're good at, and then just work hard and do the next right thing and pursue wisdom. If you'll do that in your 20s, you're going to figure it out. But don't take this thought, this pressure that, oh no, I'm 23 years old and I don't know what I'm supposed to do for the rest of my life. You're not supposed to. You're just supposed to do the best thing that you can to be the best you can be right now where you are and do the next right thing. And that's not a satisfying answer for people because we all want to know what's going to happen 15 years from now. But my experience is, at least for most of us, life doesn't work that way. So do the best that you can be. And within the context of our conversation, show the people in your world that you are for them. Serve them well. Be for them. And if you'll do that, then things will take care of themselves.
No, I love that, Jeff. It's be for them. And some advice that was given to me, which I always go to when I'm at a loss, no matter how old I am, is when I'm lost, what should I do next? What am I doing? The recommendation was exactly as you put it, is go and volunteer your time. Go be for someone else. And then that'll all of a sudden that jigsaw puzzle will kind of fall in place. So
yeah, absolutely.
I love that. Now, who's been the biggest influence on you? It's a tough question because you have so many people that have probably positive impacted you, but who's been the biggest influence or some of the best lessons that you've been given?
That's a hard one, but I have to say my dad. And my dad was a pastor. He was fantastic. He passed away 6 years ago, and one of the best things he did, even though he was very passionate about what he did, he was a great husband and a great father. And a lot of pastors' kids, it's kind of a weird world to grow up in, Eric, because especially if you're in a small town and a small church, it's kind of like you're the pastor's family and you're kind of in a fishbowl, and it's just kind of a weird thing. And that's why a lot of pastors' kids just kind of have some difficult stories and some difficult journeys. But for me, my dad, I think, really focused on his legacy. And his legacy, he figured out would be being a great husband and a great dad. And so for me, that seeing that and witnessing that and experiencing that, it's allowed me to stay to have the right priorities. And so he's just been a gigantic influence. Obviously, Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, was a huge influence. And so many lessons that Truett taught me, but one of the lessons was that we become who we surround ourselves with. And so I need to do a great job of surrounding myself with people that inspire me, that challenge me, that I want to be like. And that's our mutual friend, Shane Benson. I'll be with him in 4 days, but I'm with him and other friends of mine on a consistent basis, because one of the things they're doing is they are blazing the trail in all sorts of different areas in life. And I just want to be like that. So, Truett just lived that out. And then another business mentor, man, I mean, I could keep going, but a business mentor of mine, he would say, there's not a limit to what a person can do when he or she doesn't care who gets the credit. And I tried to hold on to that and try to live in that. There's not a limit to what, you and I can do if we don't care who gets the credit. Ultimately, we don't care who gets the credit. There's not a limit to what we can do. And so I've tried to live that out as best as I can day in and day out.
No, that makes great sense, Jeff. And when you think about it, you already mentioned this about don't be afraid to fail. Is there a story that you can tell us where you failed and then you grew from that failure?
Absolutely. Probably the most the most visible one was when I was working at Chick-fil-A and I was over sports marketing, and we had a college football bowl game called the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And it was my responsibility to create a positive brand connection for fans coming into the game so that they would eat more chicken. So it was at the Georgia Dome, which was a stadium that we blew up recently in Atlanta, like we always do. And, but it was 72,000 seats. And I noticed that the cup holders, there were these cup holders. And I thought, what if we put one of those Eat More Chicken plush cows in all the cup holders? And I thought that was a great idea, but I didn't have money in my budget to do it. So I went to Truett, the founder of Chick-fil-A, and said, hey, I have this idea. I don't have my money in my marketing budget, but I think Truett, you ought to pay for this personally, that we pay for 72,000 cows and put them in the cup holders. And Truett was just amazing. He was very generous, but he was a very, very frugal business person. So, I mean, he's asking good questions like, what's our return on investment? So anyway, we get to the end of our conversation and he says, okay, let's do this. So long story short, we put 72,000 cows in the cup holders at the Georgia Dome, and it's the University of Virginia versus the University of Georgia. And I'm a Georgia Bulldog, so that makes it even more special. And so the game begins, and Virginia quickly goes up 21-0. And the Georgia fans are just, you know, just devastated. We're going to get blown out in our own state here. So Georgia gets the ball. They're driving down their end zone, and then an official drops a penalty flag, effectively ending the drive, and the Georgia fans go nuts. And there's one guy in the end zone that looks at his cup holder, and he takes his cow and he throws it onto the field. And then the next thing, 20,000 of his closest friends take their cows and they throw it onto the field. And I'm standing in the press box at the Georgia Dome, and I see my marketing career, you know, flash before my eyes. They have to delay the game to sweep all the dead little cows off the Georgia Dome field. This is being broadcast on ESPN, and somebody says, who's the marketing genius that came up with this idea? So it was a total colossal failure, right? I mean, we've all had bad days at work, but my bad day at work was broadcast on ESPN. So my boss comes up to me, David Salyers, and says, you know, I know what he's going to say. You're fired, and, you know, all of that. But David comes up and he says, hey, there's an idea here. And I thought, what are you talking about? He goes, I think there's an idea here. He goes, I think next, let's think about this in the context of next year's game. So we got together the next week. We sat in a room and David posed the question, how can we get the cows on the field in a way that's a really cool and exciting way that creates exposure for Chick-fil-A and the cow campaign? And one of the things that was already happening is we were getting calls at the home office from Georgia fans apologizing for the Georgia fans throwing these cows on the field. And what David pointed out is the publicity value we're going to get out of this is enormous, which it was. So at next year's game, what we decided to do was to go at the top of the Georgia Dome. And as the two teams ran onto the field, we put little parachutes on the back of cows and we dumped thousands of parachuting cows onto the field and into the stands. And that was such a huge hit that that's become a Chick-fil-A tradition that they still do 20 years later. And one of the things I teach my kids and really share with other leaders is if you'll keep pressing forward what you thought was a failure and what you thought was a really bad day at the office can actually turn out to be one of the best days at the office. Because for me, that's what happened. What I thought was the worst day in my marketing career actually ended up to be one of the best days in my marketing career. So you're going to have some obstacles. The idea isn't going to work quite like you thought it would. That's not the end of the story. You got to keep pressing forward because there's the birth of the idea. There's the death of the idea. So cows being thrown on the field is a death. The resurrection of the idea, somebody coming up and going, hey, what if we did this? And then the ascension of the idea, which is for the last 20 years, this idea has been going on, not just in Atlanta, but in other parts of the country. And so for me, that's just a reminder that what I thought was a failure actually turned out to be a huge success.
And we're going to have to name this podcast Parachuting Cows. I love that. It's almost the name of a book. I'm sure it's gone through your mind. I've got to have a book called Parachuting Cows. I love that.
Yeah, at some point. So, but in fact, if you when you go to the Chick-fil-A headquarters, they have this behind the scenes tour. And you get in this room and they kind of give you an overview. And if you look up on the top of the ceiling are all these parachuting cows. And I know where that idea came from.
My sister-in-law went to UGA, so go Dogs.
And that's right.
Quick football story because it just reminded me of it. I was up at Ohio State versus Michigan State. I'm a big Michigan State guy. And they're kind enough, the executives invited me to be up at that game. Ohio State was favored by 4 touchdowns. Our quarterback wasn't even playing. And somehow, it's terrible weather. We wind up winning the game on a last-second field goal. And I'm the only one that's happy in the stadium, but I'm keeping it quiet. And I'm with the executives. I just look at them, and they had sponsored the netting. So Safe Flight was on the net that was on one of the goalposts. So behind one of the goalposts. And the ball that we'd kicked in to win the game went into that net. I just kind of looked at him. I go, well, at least it's going to be on ESPN as the lead. It's Safe Flight's going to be front and center with
That's right.
No, I love that. And I'm sure there are a ton of meetings that went in to figure out just the aeronautical engineering of how to make sure that the parachutes were going to work. I love in your book 4 that you talk about, so there's 2 universal truths that people don't like. They don't like airlines and they don't like meetings. And you cover off, turn wasted time into leverage time by making a simple shift on how you conduct your meeting. So how can we do that?
Yeah, and I'm not a natural meeting guy. That's not something that I naturally am like, oh, give me more and more meetings. But one of the things I realized, and I think we all know this, but it's just something that we might not remember, is that, in fact, I really would love to do this, but this is pretty, you know, it's pretty aggressive idea, I guess. But if you were to put on like a scoreboard, like you're talking about the Michigan State game, and when the meeting starts, the clock starts going in terms of counting all the costs that's happening in this room for overhead. And then at the end of the meeting, looking at the dollar amount and asking ourselves, did we get that kind of value out of this meeting? That's what's happening at every meeting. And so the reason I think a lot of organizations are leaving dollars on the table and wasting money is because there are so many meetings that organizations have that are not prepared for. And there's just some really simple things that we can do that I think can help us lean in and get everyone to rally around the meetings. And so one of the things I do is just call it the big L leader. There are 3 parts to this meeting, and they're all in the leadership category. But the first one is thought leader. How are we seeing and shaping the future? The second is people leadership. Are we growing? Am I growing? And then the third one is project leadership. How can we get efficient and effective? How can we get more efficient and effective? Well, what I've discovered, Eric, is that when it comes to meetings, typically thought leadership and people leadership are neglected, and we all just start focusing on projects. And projects are extremely important. But what I've tried to do over the last several years is, hey, we're gonna think the first part of this meeting. Then we're going to talk about us and our teams. How are we doing? And then we're going to go start talking about the projects. And for that, everyone knows going in, this is kind of the roadmap of the meeting. They know I'm going to bring a thought that we're going to kind of wrestle with for a little bit. Then we're going to talk about the people that we work with. How's everybody doing? And then we're going to talk about the projects that we're working on that we got to accomplish and work toward. So for me, that allows me to feel better as a leader, thinking, you know, if there was a running scoreboard of the amount of capital or overhead that's being spent on this, I feel better looking at that scoreboard and going, you know what, this was a great investment of our time versus we just wasted more money of the organization.
No, it's a good approach, is to think about that scoreboard, just that metaphoric scoreboard. I love that idea in terms of all the meetings. It'll probably reduce the amount of meetings or the meetings that you have,
yeah.
Reduce the amount of people or the amount of time that you're going to run that meeting for. As we start to wrap things up here, I can't believe how fast the time has gone here, but is there a book, a movie, a poem, or a quote that you generally find yourself parsing out to others that our audience might want to check out?
Well, a question that really wrestles around in our organization at Gwinnett Church is, what's it like to be on the other side of me? Because we're not as emotionally aware as we probably think we are, and no one is as emotionally aware as they need to be. And years ago, I did a series called Climate Change. Basically, the theory was that, or the approach of the series was, every time you walk into a room, your emotional climate comes with you, and everyone knows it, and everyone is experiencing, with the exception of you. And so what you've got to do is figure out, what is your emotional climate that you're bringing into your marriage, to your family, to your team, to your world, to your community? Because unfortunately, we're emotionally blind to it because we've never been on the other side of us. So for me, I think that's a really big deal. One of the things I encourage business leaders to, regardless of what their faith may be, is the book of Proverbs is just a huge, huge source of wisdom. And there's a CEO friend of mine who leads a multi-billion dollar business. Basically, what he does every day, whatever the date is, if it's, you know, the 16th of the month, he reads Proverbs 16. If it's the 17th, he reads Proverbs 17. And he's looking for one line that he can, that can allow him to move toward wisdom, better wisdom in his business. And I don't know of a leader out there who wouldn't say, you know what? I don't think I need more wisdom. I think I'm good. I think leaders worth following are saying, hey, I need as much wisdom as I can get. So I think that that daily system in the book of Proverbs is really a good thing. But I would ask this question, hey, what's it like to be on the other side of me to the people in your life? And when you do, you're going to get three pieces of information. You're going to get some encouraging information. You're going to get some surprising information. And you're going to get your feelings hurt. But what we have to realize is that the information is still there whether we ask the question or not. So we can either be afraid of it and be victims of it, or we can have the courage to ask it and lean in and listen and get to be better and serve the people better. And it's one of the best ways, I think, to show people that you're for them by saying, hey, I need to get better. So one of the ways that you can help me get better is to ask, to answer this question, what's it like to be on the other side of me?
What's it like to be on the other side of me? I like that. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this of you, but I'm going to put you on the spot.
On the spot.
Is there a favorite story? It can be related to anything. Just personal is powerful. I remember you telling a story once about someone's burn. I might have had Chick-fil-A burning letters, like they'd send burnt notes.
That, well, the story that you mentioned was Jimmy Collins, the former president of Chick-fil-A. I walked into the restroom one day and he's burning this document. Anytime you see a president burning documents, that's really never, usually never a good sign, right? But what Jimmy was doing, he was burning the edges of the sales report, scooping the ashes and putting it in a note and sending it to a restaurant operator with a note that said, your sales are on fire. And so it was just encouraging to, you know, from the president of the Chick-fil-A to get something like this. It just put wind in the sails of people. I would think, you know, speaking of my wife, I mean, I remember when Chick-fil-A took me to a leadership conference in Chicago, and I felt like I was supposed to eventually leave the business world to help start a church. And I came home and I told my wife, Wendy, that. And she said, hey, if this is what you think we're supposed to do, I'm all in. And that, you know, for the last, if she had kind of laughed and said, hey, you know, Chick-fil-A is treating you so well. We've got a little baby up here and this doesn't make any sense. We would have never met Eric. I would never have participated in the Buckhead Church early days of the grocery store. All of that would have been lost. So it was her courage that said, yeah, I think I see something here. Yes, I think I could see us doing this. Yes, let's move toward this. Just don't lean back from this. That was so important. It was a defining moment in our lives. And I think what my wife was doing in that moment was casting vision for our future to say, hey, yeah, I think I can see this. Let's go. And that moment defined the last 20 years of our life.
And it's been a great ride. It's amazing just all the success that you've had. And most importantly, how many people you've inspired and empowered, including myself. So thanks for all the great work that you're doing, Jeff. And continue to do it. That's Jeff Henderson. He's the best-selling author of Know What You're For, A Growth Strategy for Work, An Even Better Strategy for Life. As we wrap things up, Jeff, is there any ask that you have for the audience?
Thanks, Eric. I would love for them to just go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and buy the book and share it. And then actually at the end of the book, my cell phone number is in there. And after they've read the book, I'd love for them to just text me and let me know what they think. So that's a way for me to just stay in touch with my readers. And I love, 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 love doing that. So if you'll get the book, read it and text me, I'll text you back.
All right, Jeff, just make sure you increase your data plan before you do that.
I'm ready.
You're ready. A ton of texts. And thanks for everything that you've given to us today. And thanks for your time, because I know how busy you are. So I can't thank you enough.
Thanks, Eric. Congrats, man. Thanks for all you're doing, and just appreciate you and your listeners. And I'm very, very honored and humbled to be on your podcast.
No, it's an honor here. I can't wait to see you hopefully in Atlanta soon. And we'll just go from there and go Dogs. Hopefully they bring home the national title if my Michigan State Spartans can't do it.
That's right. Either Spartans or Dogs.
Fair enough. Thanks again, Jeff. Have a great day.
You too, Eric. Thanks.
Take care. That is it for today's Super U podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Jeff Henderson, for joining us. Please check out his book, Know What You're For. And on today's podcast, we covered everything from parachuting cows all the way to the other side of me. Thank you for listening. And also, if you can, do us a huge favor. The best way that other listeners can find us is that if you actually go out there and give us a rating. So put on those glasses, make sure you go out there, give us a star rating. Other people can go ahead and find us. And most importantly, thank you for listening to the Super U podcast. Again, this podcast is designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Super, 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 super.
Super U.